So revenge. Imagine the following scenario. You're driving, you're on your way to work, and it's bumper-to-bumper traffic, and you're already running a few minutes late, and you're just about to make it through a yellow light when the car in the lane next to you swerves in front of you, cuts you off, and then slams on the brakes because he didn't even make it through the light, and now you're going to be late to work. I think that everyone would agree that getting upset and getting angry and feeling negative feelings towards the person who cut you off in traffic is not necessarily a positive thing, but it's almost inevitable. And yet, the Torah nevertheless forbids, at least on a cursory reading, any real sort of feelings of revenge. We are not supposed to be vengeful people. We are not supposed to seek after others and take revenge. And I want to explore a little bit, what does the Torah really think about revenge as a whole? What does the Torah think about that feeling that you have when somebody cuts you off in traffic? What is that feeling? What does the Torah think about it? And what actions is that really supposed to engender? So if I were to ask you, why does the Torah think that revenge is bad? What is the reason why the Torah forbids revenge? So I think we would say one of two things. We have two models. And that's kind of what I want to begin with, just to set up two potential issues or ways to understand the prohibition of revenge. So on the one hand, we have, simply speaking, we're not supposed to be spiteful people. We're not supposed to be people that are filled with hatred, filled with like that anger that it takes to really step into the mindset of revenge. The Psukim in Vayikra tell us, Lo sikom velo sitor, do not take revenge, do not hold grudges against the members of your nation. And, in fact, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, you are supposed to love your fellow friend. So therefore, the Torah is very clear. We have one of two options when we're dealing with other people. We either can have positive feelings of love towards them, or negative feelings of hatred and revenge and grudges towards them. And the Torah tells us, V'yahavta l'recha kamocha, you should love your fellow friend. However, there are four exceptions that I want to look into today. There are four situations where the Torah seems to embrace revenge and really seems to say not only is it okay to be taking revenge, but actually commands us to engage in revenge. And what I'd like to do this evening is just look at the prohibition of revenge and look at those four exceptions, those situations where we seem to be required to be vengeful, and understand what that really means. And is that the Torah's way of backing off revenge, or is there a deeper meaning behind vengefulness that we're supposed to understand? So the Ramban, right off the bat, on these psukim in Parshas Vayikra, in Parshas Kedoshim, so he explains that the reason why we have a prohibition of holding a grudge is because we're not supposed to be vengeful people like that first model. We shouldn't be spiteful. We shouldn't be filled with hate. And therefore, says the Ramban, in a situation where there is an obligation for money to be paid, let's say somebody smashes a baseball through your window, so it's not revenge to go and demand money from court. That's the way the world works. That's not hatefulness. That's not being spiteful and vengeful. That's following the rules. That's the way the world works. That's the way the court system is supposed to function. And therefore, says the Ramban, that is, of course, not going to be included in this prohibition. However, and this is the first of the examples that we're going to encounter, the Ramban says the idea of the Goel Hadam, the blood redeemer, where if somebody's relative is, God forbid, murdered, so there is an obligation, or at the very least, there is an ability for the close relatives of the murdered victim, of the victim, to seek out the person who murdered their relative and potentially murder that person back in a very tic-tac-toe, tic-for-tat manner. The Torah is allowing this relative to avenge the death of their brother. And the Ramban says that this is normal and natural, and we are encouraged to embrace those feelings. This certainly applies to the loss of life, where the relative should be vengeful and hold a grudge until he gets justice for the blood of his brother. So that's all in approach number one. Similar, we also have the words of the Abarbanel on the Pasuk, who explains in a similar vein that is the rain very loud and bothersome to the recording, or is it fine? Great. So the Abarbanel explains that the Torah, the juxtaposition, the two halves of this Pasuk, of the prohibition of taking revenge, and the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, loving a fellow Jew, there's a reason those things are next to each other. And the Abarbanel says that we have a very small heart, physically speaking, it doesn't take up a lot of space. And in such a small space, how could it be, asks the Abarbanel, that there is room for love and hate towards one person? Therefore, says the Abarbanel, we are encouraged to minimize the hate and minimize the negative feelings we have towards each other and embrace the love that we have for each other. And lastly, just to have one more person on the record here, of to kind of round out this first model of the prohibition of revenge really being about embracing the positive feelings we have for each other, the Rambam says in his Hilchos Deos that the prohibition of losikom, the prohibition of taking revenge, is an exceedingly bad trait. Right? That feeling of needing to like find the person and get back at them, it doesn't occupy a good headspace, explains the Rambam. And therefore the Torah says that revenge is a no-go. That's model number one. Model number two is also expressed by the Rambam and others, that we have to understand when bad things happen to us, what is our gut, what is our first response? So if a person is vengeful, if a person is naturally filled with these feelings of revenge, so somebody cuts you off in traffic, you immediately think, that person did something bad to me, I need to get back at them because they hurt me. And therefore, says the Rambam, that can't be our first response. The 304th prohibition, this prohibition of revenge, is that we should not be our first response to being attacked, to being offended, should not be to search after that person and to pay them back for their mistake that they made. That's not what it should be. What should it be? So explains the Chinuch, a very important lesson, and this really encapsulates model number two. The Sefer Chinuch explains that the root of the mitzvah of revenge is to tell people and to remind us that when things happen, everything is coming to us from Hashem. And says the Chinuch, this applies to the things that happen to our lives that are positive, the blessings in our lives, but it also applies to the things that are less positive in our lives, to the things that are not so great that happen to us. Those are also coming from Hashem. And therefore, the Chinuch says, instead of our first response when someone hurts us, being, I have to get back at them, I need to find them, I need to make them pay, the Chinuch says, our first response needs to be, God's trying to send me a message. God's telling me something. And that is an opportunity that I have to make myself better and to improve myself. And that is why we don't turn to revenge. We first turn inward. We turn to ourselves and ask ourselves, what is the right way forward? What does God really want me to do? So these are, just as an introduction, we have our two models of revenge. Why does the Torah prohibit revenge? On the one hand, we have the spite model, which is that the Torah doesn't want us to be nasty people. The Torah doesn't want us to be filled with hate and constantly be thinking of getting back at each other. And we have model number two, which is that we have the take a step back model. The understand that when we're being offended and we're being hurt, our first response shouldn't be to get back at somebody, but their first step should be understanding that the things that happen to us is coming from God and is the message to us that we should search to improve. So now, let's look at some examples of the Torah where we are actually encouraged to be vengeful and how that would really work. How does being vengeful work within this Torah context? So the first exception is a very important Gemara in Yuma. On 23a, the Gemara in Yuma says that a Torah scholar who does not avenge himself and bear a grudge like a snake when insulted is not considered to be a Torah scholar. And the Gemara immediately asks, but doesn't the Torah say that we're not allowed to take revenge? How can we say that of all the people that you would think would be held to a higher standard of revenge, you would think that a Torah scholar would be held to the highest standard? And yet, The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says, that a person who is a Talmud Chacham needs to be revenged. And if they don't, if they are not vengeful, they are not considered to be a Talmud Chacham, Torah scholar. So the Gemara goes back and forth. It's a long shock matari in the Gemara exactly what the conclusion is. But the Gemara says that when are we allowing and encouraging a Talmud Chacham to be vengeful? That is only when he holds it in his heart, which is a very vague phrase, and the Rishonim, the commentaries on the Gemara, struggle to figure out what does it mean that revenge is okay if, quote-unquote, he holds it in his heart. So the Marsha does a very nice job of summarizing three main approaches in the Rishonim to this Gemara. The most basic understanding is of Rashi. Rashi says that if he holds it in his heart, that means that when a Talmud Chacham, when a Torah scholar, is offended, when he is hurt, so he is not supposed to take any revenge on his own, but he should wait and allow somebody else to step in and take revenge for him. And the Marsha says, that's not what it means. The Gemara says that we expect the Torah scholar himself to be vengeful. So he doesn't like Rashi's explanation. He then quotes the Ein Yaakov, who explains that while the Torah scholar should not be taking revenge, he should pray to God. He should ask God to take revenge for him. And the Marsha doesn't like that option either. He says this is even more force-reading the Gemara, because why would we leave our vengeance to God if we have a responsibility to do something? So we should do it ourselves. So he concludes, the Marsha explains that he thinks that the Talmud Chacham himself should do the revenge, but he should only do the revenge later. He shouldn't do it right away. It shouldn't be an immediate response. Take a step back and conspire. And that's why the Gemara uses the term of like a snake, that he should conspire and figure out a way to take vengeance. And honestly, if you were to ask me, I don't find any of these explanations particularly compelling. I think that they're, at the core, they're not addressing the question of the Gemara, which is, of all people, why is it the Torah scholar that's being told to be vengeful? What about the spiteful model? What about the prohibition of revenge not being a vengeful person? Like, where did that go? So then I found the Me'iri. The Me'iri explains that the reason why a Torah scholar is being singled out in this context is because we're not talking about a Torah scholar who was made fun of or offended in regular personal matters. It's talking about someone whose Torah stature was offended. Someone who went after Talmud Chacham for being a Torah scholar. And he says, why are we allowing revenge in this context? Why are we not only allowing, but encouraging and saying that a Talmud Chacham needs to embrace revenge? It's because if he really values what he stands for, when a Torah scholar or when a Jew values what he stands for, he stands for God's values, he stands for Torah values. So when those values are being attacked, that is where he needs to step in. That is where he needs to be the person to take revenge. And therefore he says that, of course, similar to the Ein Yaakov, he says the Torah scholar may not do it himself, but he should turn to God and say, I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to turn to you, God, and have you take revenge for me, because I understand that this is an important thing that I'm standing up for. So, and that's the end of the Gemara. The Rishonim this is not really quoted so much outside of the context of the Talmud Chacham. So what I want to take out of this, in terms of how the Torah views revenge, this is like our first piece in the puzzle. What we're getting from this whole story, the Gemara and Yuma, and specifically the comments here of the Me'iri, is that revenge is okay sometimes. And that feeling of this is not right, of a value that I stand for, is being mocked, that is something that we need to be in touch with. That is something that the Torah tells us, the Gemara is telling us, is something that we need to be aware of. And we can't just ignore, and it can't just be, oh, I let everything go all the time, don't worry. But that there are circumstances where revenge is being utilized and directed towards God. So that's piece number one. Number two, our next piece of the puzzle is that the Torah, in multiple places, describes God himself as being vengeful. The pasuk in Hazinu, Torah tells us, Li nakam v'shilem, to me is vengeance and recompense. At the time their foot falters, their day of disaster is near, and destiny rushes upon them. The Torah is speaking in very harsh languages, describing God as vengeful against the Jewish people's enemies. Similarly, the pasuk in Nachum, Kael kano v'nokem, God is jealous and avenging. God is vengeful and fierce in wrath. God takes vengeance on opponents and rages against foes. Again, very strong language describing God as, upon a simple reading, as violent, as vengeful. Almost exactly what you would not expect. God is loving, God is kind, but God is being described as vengeful. So the Abarbanel addresses this question. He says, yes, of course, the Torah does prohibit and disgrace the trait of revenge. The Torah, the prophet is describing that revenge is not a lowly trait in and of itself, only when it is directed at a fellow member of our nation. And what I think the Abarbanel is getting, the Abarbanel is speaking specifically about directing revenge towards friends versus foes, right? Fellow members of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people, versus people who are out to hurt us. That is the narrow reading of the Abarbanel. However, to take the Abarbanel one step further, I think we can suggest that the Abarbanel is really saying that we can't just view revenge as black and white. We can't just view revenge as, oh, feeling X is bad, it needs to be put away, ignored, put in a box, put away, locked away. Rather, the Abarbanel, similar to what we were discussing on the previous source of the Gemara and Yoma and the Talmud Scholar, is that we need to be in touch with those feelings, and it needs to just be directed properly. When the Torah prohibits revenge, either with the model of not being spiteful, or in the model of understanding that things are coming from God, and therefore we need to take a step back, right? That's just in terms of our day-to-day lives, our day-to-day interactions. The Torah says you should not be acting in revenge, because 9 times out of 10, or 999 times out of 1,000, your response is not going to be proper. You should not be having those feelings and directing them towards other people. That's going to most of the time be the wrong move. However, in the Torah scholar case, or particularly in God, who knows how to direct those feelings and how to align those values properly, so revenge is a very proper tool. It's not a lowly trait in and of itself. It just has to be directed properly. There needs to be an avenue for those emotions to be played out in a God-fearing way, in a way defined and aligned with Torah values. And this is exactly what the Gemara in Brachos tells us. The Gemara in Brachos is going through a long discussion of various attributes that are positive and negative, and the Gemara states a rule that any trait that is sandwiched between two names of God, so God's name, trait, God's name, is gadol, is great. So the Gemara says, hold on. Rav Acha asked, does this mean that revenge is great? Because revenge is placed between the two names of God? And responds the Gemara, yes, absolutely. In its proper time, when revenge is meant to be used, when it's being used properly, in the right context, guided in the right way, it is absolutely a great trait. So that's puzzle piece number two. We started off by trying to understand what is the nature of the prohibition. Why does the Torah bother prohibiting revenge? We have two models. Being a good person, the spite model, and understanding that things come from God and taking a step back and slowing things down, model number two. We then ask the question of, okay, so what about all these exceptions? What about all these situations where God seems to mandate or glorify revenge? And we're starting to build the pieces through the Gemara and Yuma, with the Talmud Chacham and his revenge, and the God's description as vengeful, we're starting to see that it's not a black and white question, that rather vengeance and nekama. Revenge is a thing that can be used very positively. It just needs to be felt and then acted upon in the proper way. So now, the obvious question that we're led to is, okay, so what are those? How do we know? How can we make sure that we're doing this properly? How do we know that it is going to be in the right way? And why is this all necessary? So it takes us to exception number 3. The Torah tells us in Sefer Bamidbar, after thousands of Jewish people were killed in a plague following their averos that they committed with Midian, so the Torah tells us that we had to be Nikom Nikmas Yisrael. We had to take revenge against Midian for the role that they played in causing the Jewish people to sin. And again, it's very specifically that same language of revenge, of nekama, of being vengeful. We are specifically being told to go out of our way and take nekama. And notably, Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded. This is not a commandment given to the Jewish people as a whole. Moshe was singled out, and Hashem tells Moshe, you need to lead the charge against Midian. You need to take the Jewish people, to galvanize the people, and take revenge against Midian. And Moshe Lichtenstein is trying to figure out, why exactly is it that Moshe Rabbeinu was singled out? Why couldn't it have been Yehoshua? Yehoshua was the general against Amalek. Yehoshua was going to be the leader momentarily as soon as this war was over. So why Moshe Rabbeinu specifically? So Moshe Lichtenstein suggests a very similar idea to what we've been discussing. That revenge can, in fact, emerge from a positive place. And what is this positive place? A desire for justice, repair, and restoring of the proper order. That if you take away all the biases, and if you take away all the layers, and all the spite, and all the hate of revenge, on a very basic level, what you're left with is person A hurt me. I feel hurt. I feel like I am owed something, and I want to restore the balance by paying back to him what he did to me. He broke my arm, I'm going to break his. I'm going to even the scales. I'm going to restore the order. However, and that itself, wanting to have balance and order, and to have people who have committed crimes pay for their sins, as the Ramban told us in the beginning, things following the normal rules of court and society is not nekama. That's not revenge. However, revenge is what it's very dangerous. And that's, again, what we know to be true. That many times our biases will get in the way. And many times it's going to be very difficult to know, am I going too far? Is this what it means to balance the scales? He broke my arm. Is it right that I should break his? In my anger, in my clouded judgment of just having my arm broken, I may think that it is absolutely the right move, that I could go ahead and break his arm. However, and that's why the Torah tells us, no revenge. Because most of the time, we're not going to know how to do that. We're not going to figure it out. And that is why, as Bnei Yisrael stand on the brink of war against Midian, they cannot be certain that their motives are pure. God's telling them, you have to go take revenge. But what's too far? Who are they supposed to take revenge against? And that is why Moshe's personal leadership comes to assuage that doubt. His command of the fighting forces symbolizes the fact that the people's motives are pure. Rav Lichtenstein is suggesting that Hashem needed to tell Moshe that he needed to lead the charge, because only when our leaders are aligned with Torah values and our revenge is coming from those Torah leaders, that is when we can be sure that we're doing the right thing, that we're not acting out of proportion, that the punishment actually does, in fact, fit the crime. A very similar idea is developed by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in Nesichos Moser, where he is addressing the question, a very interesting phenomenon with David HaMelech. David, when he was king, he was walking on his way, and all of a sudden, he just gets cursed out. This horrible, horrible curse by Shimi ben Gera. And at the time, David doesn't react. He doesn't do anything. He lets it go. However, right before he dies, he turns to his son Shlomo, and he says, Shlomo, I need you to kill the person who cursed me. I need you to kill him. And the question that Rav Chaim Shloetz is addressing is, it took him his whole life, he was totally fine. And now all of a sudden on his deathbed, so now he's going to go and take revenge against the person who cursed him? And was he just like making himself look better by not taking revenge until he was going to die? Like, why now? What is this random, this seemingly random time of asking for this act of revenge of Shlomo HaMelech? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz explains, V'nira bir inyana shel nekama. And this is like the key line in this whole entire approach from Chaim Shmulevitz, was that the entire idea behind nekama, ki tochna, the nature, the form of revenge, eino onish greda. It's not simple punishments. You do this, you get why. But it's a mitzoy cheshbon hatzedek ba'olam. It is the pursuit of justice. The underlying character trait. Right? When the Abarbanel told us that revenge is not a bad trait in and of itself, so what is the good side of that trait? Where are we supposed to find ourselves? What's the underlying trait that's positive? It's the mitzoy cheshbon hatzedek. It is the pursuit of justice. It is the pursuit to even the scales in a way that is proper and guided by Torah values. And therefore, David HaMelech knew that he could not take that revenge himself because he didn't know if that was going to be proper. But ultimately, the act of being of the king of Israel, of David HaMelech being cursed, couldn't go unpunished forever. Those scales needed to become equal. And that was why he turned to Shlomo, who was going to become the new king, and says, you have to take this from me. I can't do this myself, because I don't know if what I'm doing is going to be done correctly, but you're going to do it for me, because as a pursuit of justice, to ensure that acts are being repaid in a proper way, there needs to be an element of revenge. There needs to be this element of equaling the scales. So now that's step number three. Puzzle piece number three comes in and tells us that, yes, we know that revenge is not always bad. We know that it needs to be directed in the proper way. And we know that itself is not necessarily negative. But there's something positive. It's coming from a positive place, which is why the Torah needs to prescribe exactly when and where it's relevant. And what is that place? Again, we don't know exactly. And that's why most of the time, revenge is going to be prohibited. But there are certain circumstances. When Moshe Rabbeinu, when our leaders are telling us, guided by Torah values, that this is what we need to do, so that's one way that we know that we're doing the right thing. And ultimately understanding that that drive for revenge has a positive aspect to it of wanting to make sure that the world is running properly. So this leads us to exception number four, and it's going to be the final piece of the puzzle. There is a very surprising parsha in the Torah, comes up a few times, the idea of a Goel Hadam, the blood redeemer. So the Torah tells us that when a person's relative is murdered, accidentally or on purpose, there is a, according to some opinions in the Mishnah, or in the Gemara, there is an obligation for the close relatives of the victim to find the murderer and bring them to justice. And that may mean a mitzvah to go ahead and kill them. Almost a direct act of revenge. And the question that the Mefarshim deal with is, like, this seems very tribal. This is, we're not following court. We don't seem to be following any laws. This just seems to be, person's relative is killed, they go ahead and murder. And it just seems to go against everything that we know about revenge and about constraint and about the our based in our courts. So what do we do with this? And in fact, some commentaries suggest that the Torah was only, this was not ideal. It is not ideal that a person should have this leeway, that he can do this. However, Rav Sacks suggests that the Torah is really doing so much more than just allowing the relative of a murder victim to do whatever he wants to get back at the person who killed his relative. He says that the Torah does something almost sneaky that you don't even notice. The Torah inserts the principle of justice. It can't just be an act of revenge. The killer must be protected until his case has been heard in a court of law. We have to first know, was it on purpose? Was it an intentional murder, or was it accidental? And then even if it is accidental, the murderer has the option to go to the Ari Mikla, the cities of refuge, where he can stay. And only if we have jumped through all those hoops, he didn't go to the Ari Mikla, or if it was an intentional murder, only then does the blood relative step in and take retribution for his relative. And he says this single act, this following the rules of the Torah, turns the act from revenge into retribution. And this makes all the difference in the world. Now you'll ask me, okay, so what is the difference between retribution and revenge? They sound very similar to me. So says Rav Sacks that revenge is an I-thou relationship. You did something to me, so I get back at you. It's personal, it's biased, it's filled with emotions, it can get out of hand, and that is what the Torah says, that's revenge, that's not allowed, that's not going to be in play. It is intrinsically personal, says Rav Sacks. Retribution, by contrast, is impersonal. It's not me and you, it's law. There is an impartial rule of law. The Torah, by creating a system where, quote-unquote, revenge can be served, where the relative can balance the scales, can repay his relative's death, that creates a space where it is no longer personal. It's no longer about that act of revenge. It's about fulfilling the duty of the law. It is about creating a system. It is about following rules and ultimately being guided by the morals of the Torah. And this is that final piece of the puzzle. We know what the prohibition is. We have our models of understanding why we have a prohibition of revenge. We see from the Talmud Chacham and from the descriptions of God that revenge can be used in a positive way. What is that positive way? How do we get there? We need to be guided by Torah values. As in, by Midyan, we need to be guided by the proper people, following the right values, and understanding that it's incredibly important to tread that line very carefully. And how do we do that? What does that look like? What that looks like is removing ourselves from the picture. And this, I think, really takes us back to our initial two models of revenge. The Chinuch tells us that a person shouldn't take revenge because we have to understand that things come from God, and therefore our first response shouldn't be to attack the person who did something wrong, but it should be to take a step back and reflect and take that message. And by doing this, by taking this advice of Rav Sacks, of not making this about I versus you, but making it about an objective situation, understanding that wrongs need to be righted, that is how we know that we're on this right path of retribution, of paying back the debt and not turning it into revenge. So to conclude, and this is, I wouldn't say it's a tangent, but it's an important closing note on this whole topic. Why is this necessary? Why does the Torah is giving us these situations? So why is this necessary? So the Torah suggests, the Rav Sacks suggests, and just to show you a bit of the brilliance of Rav Sacks and just his just knowledge of so many different things. So Rav Sacks quotes three people when he's trying to explain the Torah view on revenge. He says, he quotes an irreligious Jew, he quotes an archaeologist, and he quotes a Christian pastor. Those are the three people that he is employing to explain to us his perspective on Jewish revenge. And I'm not going to go through his entire discussion, but I am going to quote from you what he takes away from Miroslav Volf, who was a Croatian Christian theologian. He won many awards for his books that he wrote, specifically this book here, Exclusion and Embrace. And he was living at a time during the ethnic wars of the 1990s. And he makes a very powerful point. He says, in a world of violence, we are faced with an inescapable alternative, either God's violence or human violence. The way the world works is that people are going to make the wrong choice. Look at the world around us. People make the wrong choices. People make the choice of doing violence, of crime, of barbarism. And there are two responses. There's God's violence or human violence. We can either make all the calls ourselves, or we can leave it to God. We don't have the option, claims Miroslav Volf, to say that, to be pacifists, and say that no violence ever needs to happen, ever. He says, why? He says, my thesis that the practice of nonviolence requires a belief in divine vengeance will be unpopular. His thesis is that in order for us to be people that are nonviolent and to not take things into our own hands, we have to believe that God, in a way, is violent, that God will take revenge and right the wrongs of what's happening around us. And he says, imagine you are delivering a lecture in a war zone. He says, you're giving a speech to people whose cities and villages have been plundered and burned and leveled to the ground, whose daughters and sisters have been raped, whose fathers and brothers have had their throats slit. What's the topic of your speech? The Christian attitude to violence. And what's your thesis? We should not retaliate because God is perfect, non-coercive, and loving. How do you think that's going to go over? They are not going to take you seriously for a second. If you're speaking to a people who have had millennia of violence perpetrated against them, telling them that God is nonviolent and therefore we should be nonviolent because God doesn't like any violence and no revenge is ever on the table, it's not going to go over well. He says, soon you would discover that it takes the quiet of a suburban home for the birth of the thesis that not human nonviolence corresponds to God's refusal to judge. It takes people who have never experienced violence. It takes people who have never had violence perpetrated against them to come up with this fairyland idea that the world can exist without any retribution, without anything. And therefore, says Riff Sachs, that yes, there are some times that we do need to take vengeance. But ultimately, we leave the vengeance to God. We believe that when it comes to preventing ourselves from being hurt or to prevent future harm, of course, we do whatever is necessary. But ultimately, what do we say when, God forbid, a soldier is killed? Hashem yikom dama, that Hashem should avenge his blood. That ultimately, we believe, we turn to God and we say, God will make things right. That when we are guided by those Torah values and when we're doing what needs to be done but not going too far, we enable ourselves to do that by shifting that weight and giving it to God and saying that you, God, are going to do that for us. That is something that Moshe taught. That is what was being sung in Hazinu. When the Torah describes God as vengeful, that is, we are being told that perfect justice, that perfect vengeance is a real thing. It can happen. But we are probably not going to do it, and that's why we need to turn to God. There are things we must leave to Him. Because if we don't, we will find ourselves in the condition of humanity before the flood, where the world was filled with violence, and ultimately, therefore, vengeance does specifically belong to God. It must not be practiced by us in the name of God. We can't assume that we're doing everything correctly all the time. And we really need to leave that up to Hashem. So just to summarize briefly, we began by proposing two models of why the Torah prohibits revenge. Either just as a general, be a good person, don't be spiteful, don't be filled with these hateful feelings. Or two, that our first response to being attacked should not be to immediately push back and seek revenge, but it should be to take a step back and say, I know this is coming from God, what does God want from me in this circumstance? What does God really want? And then we looked at four situations where the Torah seems to encourage revenge. We spoke about the Torah scholar who needs to be standing up for his values, and he needs to be vengeful, and he needs to hold those grudges because he understands what he stands for, and he understands what needs to be done. We saw that God is described as vengeful, and the Abarbanel who explained to us that the actual character trait of revenge is not negative, that it is something that can be utilized properly. And we spoke about two ways that the Torah describes how it can be used properly. Once, with the story of Midian, where Moshe is singled out as the leader of the Jewish people to tell them and to show them exactly how to take revenge against Midian. What does it mean to run a Jewish army and to take revenge against enemies? And lastly, we spoke about the idea of the Goel Adam, of the blood redeemer, and Rav Sacks' idea that the Torah creates a system, creates a space for justice to be had, to remove the personal, to remove that anger, that violence of the revenge, and turn it into a seeking of justice, as Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explained, that seeking of justice to even the scales. And we concluded by understanding that when we say we don't want any revenge, we don't mean to be full pacifists, that there should be no violence ever, but that we should understand the place for it, and that ultimately we believe that God one day will right the wrongs that have been perpetrated against us so that we can be better people ourselves.